Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I've been having a great time interviewing people about different qualities, and as you know, love, compassion, forgiveness, which was last week's show, and gratitude. Then we got into a month of service, which was wonderful. And one of the programs that I had on was with Carol Wirtz, and she was on a Skype. We were on a Skype call, and somehow it didn't record properly. So now I have asked Carol if she'd be so kind to be interviewed again, this time over the telephone. And she said yes, and we're going to try it again. And for all you listeners, it was a wonderful show and was really a shame that you couldn't hear Carol. I mean, you can kind of guess my questions if you heard her responses, but it's hard to do it the other way around. So I have Carol with us again today. And Carol, thank you very much for coming back.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And I'm going to start again a little bit differently. So last time I had Carol talk about her life, and, you know, she's a member of a order called Sisters of Charity, and she lives in Anthony, New Mexico, which is just outside of El Paso. And there's a really special story about where you live, Carol. Can you talk to me about that, about your house and how you guys came to be there? I thought that was a really wonderful story.
Well, we were living way on the other side of town, the east side of town, because two of the sisters I live with started a little healthcare clinic out in the Colonias. And as time went on, over maybe 15 years, and they decided that they were going to transition out and do something else. And in the meantime, we were going over to Mexico and crossing over the Santa Teresa port of entry, which is way on the west side of town where we live at this time. And every time we come back, I would just say, I wish we could get off and go home here. You know, the they always say, yeah, well, dream on. So I'm going to. And so then about 8 years ago, I was telling this doctor that I was working with that I would really like to live on this side of town out in the valley. And so she took me for a ride one day, and she said, let's just go look for houses and land. And knowing that our community doesn't purchase land and we don't buy houses, and probably anything out this way would not be within our means. But we went anyway, and we got to this piece of land, and I said, oh, that would be a perfect place to live. And she said, yeah, I think you guys should live here. I think this would be the place. And so we were just dreaming, and I told a friend of mine who told another friend who I actually knew from before, and they had owned 10 acres of land. And she said, well, actually, we wanted to do something for the people in Mexico, and so we're going to donate part of our land, and the sisters can build a house. And so anyway, magically, things just happened where we got donations, we got the money, we got everything just kind of fell into place. We have this beautiful home out in the country, has 7 bedrooms, so it's, I guess you could call it like a contemporary convent.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we're here, and it was a miracle. And so we all said, okay, God, what do you want us to do next now that you've given this place up? Anyway, so that was it.
And so what was the answer?
What was the answer? Well, we just get projects, and I think part of the big thing is being more immersed over in Mexico in our project over there.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It started off being just going over every other Saturday, and it's kind of turned into be part-time but kind of full-time. We go over 2 or 3 days a week.
Wow. So can you tell me a little bit about the project? Because this is one of the things that we spoke about a few weeks ago was this project and how it's connected with Reiki.
Well, we started going over, like you said, about 10 years ago, and we were just providing simple health care. Janet, who was a physician, was doing prenatal care because in the colonia that we were going to, it didn't exist at that time. And as time went on, handicapped or special needs children started coming to the clinic, and more started coming, and so we kind of reevaluated and decided maybe God's asking us to just really focus this project on a center for kids with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing, all of us are Reiki trained, and so we were providing all of the therapy at that time. And we would have maybe 10, 12 mothers with their children sitting in the waiting room waiting for their children to be treated. And thought, this is just not efficient. All the kids coming, and you know, we were only over there on Saturdays, so we had this idea that maybe we could get Jean Ferris, my Reiki teacher, to come over and teach some of the mothers to do Reiki. And so we asked a few of them if they'd be interested, and they go, "Oh yeah, yeah," they would, because they were always interested in watching their children being treated and the results that the children had. So they were really excited. So we started off with 6 mothers, and then 3 or 4 of them, in turn, for their training, they were to treat other children. That was part of the, they received the training then to give back, they would treat the other That's kind of how it started. And then eventually we had another Reiki class, and we had, I think, 14 in that class. And now we have 6 other mothers who get a small stipend. Not all of them are mothers. Some of them are just women from the colonia. They do all of the therapies with the children. They give the Reiki. So.
And what do you now do when you're with your time when you go over? Because I know that you're over there several times a week. Is that true?
Yes. Well, I help out with therapies. We'll have what's nice is we'll have 2 or 3 people. We have 3 treatment tables. We usually 2 treatment tables going at a time, so we'll have 2 or 3 practitioners treating a child, so that's nice. And so I treat the children. I also taught the mothers how to do some massage techniques, a little physical therapy. But there's one little girl, she's a 2-year-old Down syndrome child, and her mother she's one of the cooks. We hired her to be the cook in the clinic. So I pretty much take care of her while I'm over there.
Oh, I see. That's wonderful. So, I just, I'm kind of envious because I sometimes dream of having what they call a service project, and it seems like your whole life is service. So, I don't know. I've gotten over feeling guilty about not having, quote, service projects, but I'm just wondering, how would it be if people wanted to start something like this? Do you feel like it's possible, or do you just start doing things, or do you feel like where you are in your community, because you already have taken a vow of service, that this opens doors for you? So I'm just wondering about that.
I think all of the above. I think, first of all, I do believe being part of a community whose focus is service really lends itself and is, can really help move projects along because it is focus, and that's what you do, and you have the support of people in your community. I think it's easier for a group of people to say, let's do this. Happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know individuals that, for me, think I need to be a part of a group. So I think you just, if you have a desire to do something, if your heart's calling you to do something, you know, start off little and just start doing something. And I mean, I think that's even what we did as part of our group and community. We just started off little, and then as you put your heart into it and you kind of unfold, and I think sometimes, you know, we can have an inspiration and we do something little and then it kind of catches fire.
Yes.
And so it's like we're not doing it. Sometimes I think we get, I believe all the time, we get the inspiration and you do what you can do and you let the rest unfold and happen and trust that God is all a part of it and you have support from the universe, from God, from Reiki, whatever it is that you're, you know, doing or putting out.
Well, as you know, we've been doing a lot of programs this year on love and compassion, gratitude, and service. And one of the reasons why I asked you on the show was because you have really touched my life when you came over a year ago, Christmas, and after Christmas, and with Jean and Hira, her sister, and you all treated me while I was in the throes of chemotherapy. And that was such a wonderful service. It was just made my whole rest of my time in chemotherapy much more informative and much lighter. Even though physically it was stronger, I felt really uplifted. It was really beautiful, and I hope someday that I can return that kind of service to people.
Well, I think the first part is having that desire.
Yeah, thank you. So you have several service projects that you're working, that you do in your life these days, but can you, let me go back a little bit and ask you how you got into this life. Like, did you, as a child, imagine that you would become a sister, or do you call yourself nuns anymore?
Well,
sorry, I want to be politically correct, but sometimes I'm not.
Well, that's okay. People call me, get called nun sisters, but actually, a nun is the sisters who are, or people I should say, who are, live the contemplative life.
Ah.
And sisters are more apostolic. So that's kind of when, back in the, way back when there were only nuns and they lived the monastic life, St. Vincent de Paul, who was kind of one of our founders, saw the needs of the poor in the street, and he needed to have, wanted people, sisters, nuns, to do this, but they couldn't. He needed to create a model that would allow women to be religious and work with people on the street. So he called them sisters, so that's kind of where the differentiation is.
Oh, I see. Well, that's something I didn't know.
It kind of gets thrown all together and get called nuns, sisters.
Right, by the unknown. Or the not knowing, as it were. So how did you come to your calling as a sister?
Well, when I was, when I was a child, I always had a dream of being a missionary, and I always thought I was going to go to Africa and be a teacher. And so I was always fascinated by lives of missionaries, and I read stories when I was younger, and I always thought that would just be such a fascinating life. I don't know, I guess there was just something in me as a child that thought that would be what I was going to do. I don't know where that came from. My rest of my friends and my sister used to look at me like, you're crazy. So it was kind of like my little fantasy life.
Uh-huh.
But when after I graduated from college, I needed to make a choice as to what I was going to do, and I thought maybe I'd join the Peace Corps or something like that. And then I met a Franciscan sister at the college who invited me to teach in a little mission school down in Zuni, New Mexico. It was down there where I met the Sisters of Charity. 2 years later, I ended up entering the community and just felt very right, like that was my life.
Uh-huh. Beautiful.
I think what drew me the most is the whole idea of living in community and working with people, living with, praying with people who have that same focus or mission. To do service, to live a life of prayer, to support one another,
mm-hmm.
share in common. That's kind of in a nutshell.
Uh-huh. And when you talk about service, could you give me, I mean, definition is not quite the right word, but a kind of description of the quality of service, because it's a kind of overused word these days and a lot of different, especially for me, this is my opinion, in a lot of New Age contexts. And I feel that somehow I come to a kind of still point of service when I talk to you and when I see how you live and what you spend your time on, which is to prepare yourself for service. And I think that's really beautiful. And also, maybe I need to be a little bit more educated into what that means for you.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. Words like love, service, compassion, I think a lot of times they just become like the buzzwords, or, you know, we kind of just use them.
Uh-huh.
To me, I can only say to me what service means. To me, it comes from a place in your heart where it comes from your heart, and you give without expecting anything in return,
mm-hmm.
knowing that, I guess, you always have something come in return when you do service.
Right.
I mean, I think it comes from a place in your heart where you're like the vehicle, you're not the doer. You're like,
right.
It allows the whatever it is that to flow through you and be for the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And do you find it scary? Like, in the sense of, you know, let me rephrase the question. I guess that's a little bit abrupt. Okay. When I think about what you just said, I think that, let's see. One has to believe then in this kind of universal cycle of things. So, you know, in our day and age, well, at least my day and age, I grew up with this idea that I did something and I got paid for it. So it instilled this kind of interesting dynamic of a balance between two things, but it didn't give me a circular motion. And when I got into Reiki, I realized that there was a circular thing happening. So if I did something, sometimes I wouldn't get immediately something back from the person that I treated, or that I, you know, out of just spontaneity, I did something. It came back as, you know, all around the circle. Like there was a whole series of events that would come around, and then maybe 3 or 4 years later, something would happen, and I would feel like it was because I had done that treatment that day or something. So it's a really different, well, for me, it seems like it's a really different way of looking at the world, and that it's scary because you have to really have trust that the circular part is really in action, whereas the balance part, which is kind of two people give and take, doesn't require that much trust. You only give when you know that you're going to receive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think trust is like the key word. I think what, for me, when I grew up Catholic, and so I heard the gospel stories.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all of them are about, the first shall be last. Don't worry about, how your needs are going to be met. I came to serve, not to be served. The whole message is about service, and don't worry about, you know, how your needs are going to be met. If you live that life where you can do for others, be for others, you know, live from your heart, then that will always be reciprocated. That will always, you will always be taken care of. And I think, you know, I think a lot of times when I hear those, and like they were stories. It's like, yeah, you know it somewhere, you know it's true, but there's a part of you that, is it really true?
Like, yeah.
No, is that, but there's also this part that kind of nudges you, that pushes you almost like to, just to see, because, you know, if you don't, what else is there? Like, you know, I guess it's kind of like living at that place where, how do I say this? You know, when we can control everything, how we see everything happening out there. And if I do this, I'm going to get this. But there's this place of almost like risk and adventure and, well, that's not the right word, but where you just want to put yourself out there on the edge, because there's a sense of freedom. Something beyond you. We're all looking for that something beyond ourselves. When I find the most joy is when I just totally let myself be open and do, you know, what's flowing through me. And, you know, there's the joy that comes back is something that you could never create by yourself or that you could ever find looking for it. So I think when you experience those moments, and I think we all have, it's those things that allow us, like, yes, there's more, if you just keep opening and letting yourself be, to give. It's like that prayer of St. Francis. It's when you give, you receive. It's only in giving that you receive.
Right, and you know, that's something that I've experienced in Reiki, even when I, in the beginning, when I first started treating, and I think that's true for a lot of people. And I wonder about where that lesson goes. Like, we had the experience, but is it possible to transfer that into other parts of our lives?
Well, I say, when I first learned Reiki, Reiki has taught me so many things. I think sometimes you just kind of take it for granted because it's just part of your life.
Right.
Excuse me. Then when I first learned Reiki and being told this, you know, all you have to do is you lay your hands on yourself or another and the Reiki starts flowing. You don't have anything. There's nothing you can do to make it more or better or less. It just flows. It's like this gift that just flows through you. And that was just such an awesome experience or gift, because it was something so tangible that was just, you know, given to me right there, and it happened instantaneously. And I think Reiki is so much like that spirit of service. You know, it's always there, whether we're, you know, whatever condition we are in, if we're there and open to allow it to happen and to allow ourselves to do it or to put ourselves in the place to do it for another, it's always there. And that's kind of like how God is, I think. You know, or that field of whatever that is, that goodness that's always there. If we're there and available and open to receive it and to give it. So for me, that was such a wonderful, tangible gift that Reiki taught me. It continues to, you know, I've had so many, I remember one of my first experiences with Reiki. I was working with a woman who was a breast cancer patient, and she had radiation treatments, and she was burning so badly, and she was so uncomfortable, and I just said, well, let me try this Reiki. And burning all went away, and it was just incredible to see what Reiki did. Like, birds just don't, you know, go away like that. So I know it was a very powerful experience for me to experience that in one of my first treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And so I continued to work with breast cancer patients from that time on, because I thought, well, this is such a valuable gift to, you know, for this particular population of people. So that became one of my, one of my ministries for the last 10 years, was working with breast cancer patients. And time and time and time again, I've just seen miracles happen through Reiki. Such relief, you know, that people experience. And I'm always so grateful, like, when you have someone who's so sick from chemo, or they're on fire and from the radiation, or they're scared, and being able to just put my hands on someone and do Reiki, and, you know, always something good happens. It's such a nice feeling. I think it's such a service to be able to give to people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, when you talk about that, I just kind of go back into my memory banks about my own experience, which was amazing. And I don't know how I would have ever survived without Reiki. It was pretty amazing. I feel that it was just one of the things that, I don't know how I would have done it without it. It's clear. And then Reiki brought me you and Jean and Hira and lots of other people who came to give me Reiki hands-on, which was wonderful. Yeah. So, when you started to go down to Mexico, and you started to treat the children there, what happened? Like, one of the things that's so interesting for me is in the different cultures. Like, sometimes when miraculous things don't happen, people get very disenchanted with Reiki, and I'm just wondering, what are the experiences that you've had in Mexico when you've gone down and treated the children? Like, they don't expect, for instance, a Down syndrome child to not be Down syndrome, or, like, do you know what I mean? I'm just trying to feel this and be, again, a little politically correct, but trying to figure this out, that part.
Well, I think I wasn't sure when we first started doing Reiki, because parents didn't understand it, and they would bring the children, and if they bring one, we'll just kind of lay our hands on them on the table.
Right.
I think they were expecting, I thought they would be expecting, like, that we're going to be doing physical therapy and exercises, and what are they going to be thinking, that they bring their children all this way, and we just lay our hands on them.
Right.
And how do you explain what Reiki is? But that didn't happen at all.
No?
I feel like maybe that culture and people living in such desperate situations, I'm not sure, but they seemed much more open, like there was no question. It's almost like they could see or feel what was happening.
Oh, wow.
And to touch their children. And then when the mothers wanted to learn, it's like, oh, yes, we'll learn. There was no questions, like, what is it? And, you know, they didn't have the questions or the suspicion or the skepticism.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then they learned, and then they would treat each other, and then they would, like, oh, my gosh, I feel so good. And just seeing, they could see the transformation in each other once they started treating themselves and treating one another. I remember one of the mothers, she was a young mother, and she was diabetic, and she had a traumatic life, but she was always fainting and hysterical. And
oh, my goodness.
she learned Reiki, and now she's like in charge of, you know, running the bathtub and running, you know, a lot of the different things at the clinic. And she's just, you know, she comes with her scrubs on and she's organized and she's, and I just think this is such an incredible transformation. And I forget what people were like when they came.
Uh-huh.
Grateful. And they will say, they'll come and tell you, I had this experience with Reiki and it's stuff like I've never experienced or heard of. I mean, incredible stories, incredible experiences, should I say.
Wow.
So they're just open. You know, I don't think they have a lot of the, maybe the luxury of being skeptical and not using it. It's like, you know, most of them use it for their health care because they don't have access to health care.
Right.
So you know, amazing stories of healing that happen in their families or with themselves and with their children.
That's so wonderful.
For me, it's been a real grace see them experience Reiki and to tell me. And I think, maybe that has influenced my even openness, and I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But just be immersed in, you know, all the mothers so freely. Oh, you know, Reiki's like a common word around there. You know, it's not like...
Isn't that wonderful?
Everybody knows what Reiki is, talks about Reiki. What's Reiki this? I mean, they're... And the mothers will tell me, well, we're going to do Reiki and the new mother. And, well, okay, what is Reiki? Well, they wouldn't explain what it is. They'll just say, okay, and then they want to learn. We've got another group. We're going to have to get Jean over there to do another group soon.
Oh, great.
Parents, but it's a wonderful place to, for someone who does Reiki, I think, to experience the whole clinic that, you know, Reiki is like, but he knows what Reiki is.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, you know, when I first when I first became a master, and then I was wandering around trying to find where I was going to live and so on. I didn't know that was what I was doing, but I was. And I ended up in this little community in British Columbia, up in the Slocan Valley, near Nelson, British Columbia. And Nelson is still sort of the one of those places where all the last hippies go and all the new hippies migrate to. You know, it's a very interesting place. But because of their philosophy of life, they are totally into Reiki. You know, it's like they don't question it in the same way. And for them, it's not a matter of that they don't have medical care. They don't want medical care. I mean, they feel like most everything in their body is due to natural cycles. So they grow their own food. They, you know, a lot of times what they buy is soybeans, salt, and rice, and oil. And they make their own tofu, and they, you know, have oil, and they can't grow rice up there. So it's a very interesting place. And that was the most wonderful place and environment for me to grow up in as a Reiki master, because there weren't any questions. It was just like, oh, well, I'm stuck out here and there's not another soul for 40 miles. I think I should do Reiki. And they did, and they used it for everything. Their tractors, their donkeys, their dogs, their children, childbirthing, everything. It was wonderful. And it gave me just this empowerment about the limitlessness of what we're working with. And it was very humbling.
Yeah, it's interesting how two totally different types of communities and, you know, both. It just shows you Reiki, you know, for everyone. For, for all you, for.
Yeah, yeah. When you go and do your service projects in El Paso, so you have the your own personal commitment to women with breast cancer. Do you do a clinic where they can come and receive your treatments, or do you visit them individually? Or
Well, I used to, for the last 9 years, I had worked with a breast cancer surgeon.
Oh, I see.
Just a couple months ago, she moved her practice up north. So I still see patients at one of the other facilities where I had worked with her, as well as out of my, and then I'm also working down in a women's shelter, or volunteering down in a women's shelter.
Uh-huh. What's that about?
Well, it's a homeless shelter run by the Loretto Sisters, and it's a beautiful shelter where the women are, they're either in school or some kind of program or trying to get a job. They work with them to transition into a place where they can be on their own. And it's a real healing environment. I do a lot for the women as far as trying to help with their whole healing process.
Uh-huh. And these are women that come out of abusive homes, or they don't have a home, or...
Yeah, some of them ended up in treatment centers and don't have a home. Some of them were professional women who just from life circumstance ended up broke or had deaths
wow.
in the family, multiple deaths, or were depressed. Most of them got some kind of into a real bad state of depression and just found themselves homeless for various reasons.
That's amazing. That's really hard to hear, huh? Sometimes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, a lot of my first two people I worked on did Reiki with were my age, and they were all professional women.
Wow.
Clinical psychologists, so, you know, just life circumstances. But all of them will tell you, we talk with them, and they kind of share their stories, and all of them said, you know, how I was living my life, you know, I kind of hit the bottom, and life is such an illusion. Sometimes what we think is real, it is not. And so they'll say even though they're homeless spiritually, they're in a better place because they see life differently.
Wow.
So it's just real interesting. And they love the Reiki. They love, they'll say, I don't know what you're doing to me, but this is like, my girl, she was kind of shy to come in, and Peggy, who's another sister, she does Reiki as well. Both of us go down there on Mondays, and we gave this young woman a treatment, and she rolled over after it was over. She said, wow, what was that? I heard one of them go out the door, and they said, did you get massage therapy? And she said, no, they did this something else, but it was like a miracle.
Wonderful. So they try to transition these women back into quote a normal life, whatever that means,
right?
Through education and training programs and so on.
Right. Yeah. Some are going to school. Some are actually working, trying to save enough money to get an apartment.
Uh huh. Uh-huh. Wow. So, I'm just wondering, just the facility, so it's a big house with has lots of bedrooms, or they have a large hall, or I'm just trying to picture this.
I think it was at one time maybe like a nursing home.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. I'm not sure, but they have about 25 individual rooms. They'll have a common kitchen, there's like a library. And so they'll have different common spaces, but all the bedrooms have bathrooms. You know, they'll just a small living space, but I think it may have been some kind of home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's beautiful. And so this is a lot of your time. So you work with the kids in Mexico and this women's homeless shelter, and then your own project, so to speak, with breast cancer. I'm just wondering, when you think about service and you think about service as a group, it's not just doing, though, is it? Is it also the part, you do have some parts of your life that have to do with meditation and worship and prayer?
Well, that's the center of our life, and all of our ministries, service, whatever, flow from that. So our main, in the mornings, we always have our meditation time together. Sometimes we'll have group community days where we'll just spend time in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're discerning to do a ministry, we'll discern it together. We'll talk about it. One of us may have an idea, or as a group, we may have an idea.
Uh-huh.
Where we want to put our focus.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Or our time and energy.
Right.
So, like, I had the inspiration to go down to the women's shelter. And then I went down there one day, and then Peggy asked if she thought she might like to do that as well. So that's kind of become, both of us, a community project. The one over in Mexico, we all do that as a community.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has individual projects also that we're doing.
Wow, that's so amazing.
And I think the important thing is keeping a balance. You can't just do. It's like, we fortunately have a great community here. There's six of us, and we have a good community life.
That's great.
We do gardening. We have our activities here that we do together as well.
Oh, that's great. Wow, sounds kind of idyllic. So, I just think about all the time that I spend in, like, preparing food and shopping and thinking about it, and about keeping the house clean and worrying about guests and kind of the secular life. And I just kind of wonder if I could give all that up. And I guess it doesn't really feel like giving it up, though, does it?
No, in the house clean and the food shop. Either.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, yes, we share it. We share the responsibility.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, the last time I got really inspired by our talk, and I'm much, I don't know, I'm somehow deeply touched by our talk today, in the sense that, I think a lot of Reiki people have this kind of feeling that they'd love to be in a small community and be able to wake up in the morning and practice Reiki together, and then have projects that you're doing and so on, and just, kind of live the life of Reiki. And we're all caught up in kind of the secular life, and I just wonder about creating some kind of a service. I don't know if this could work with Reiki, but it would be very interesting. I guess you'd have to have some kind of financial backing, though, do you think?
Well, maybe not. I mean, I think you, first of all, I believe you can dream it, and there's a desire.
That
everything's possible.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes we look out there, and because, we have these rule sets or these ideas how things work, or, and how much we need for this and that. And so a lot of times we look at, and then we let that kill our dream.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is the dream? What is it you want to do? What is it you're feeling desired, or, where's that desire and that inspiration?
Right.
And focus and kind of plant that out there, and like, what's possible? If something could be possible, what could it be? Rather than, we have to have this and this and this. And I think a lot of times, even for us, that stops the project.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think they're like killers.
Uh-huh.
Start asking all that. I mean, eventually, sometimes I believe a lot of times that stuff gets taken care of. But if you don't put the dream out there and the possibilities and keep them out there without squelching them, you know, keep them open rather than collapsing the possibilities. And dream with people, like, what would be possible? What if we desire? Anything's possible. And I think with Reiki, it's like, look at the stuff that happens with Reiki. I mean, look at miracles that happen with Reiki. Here and at distance.
Yes.
Like, even more so with Reiki, because you've got this powerful, wonderful gift to support you in doing it. And even more so than if you can have Reiki and you wanted to do something. Like, if all these people that do Reiki, oh, I think that would be incredible.
Yeah.
What could happen?
Well, I've been speaking to this friend of mine, well, on occasion, because she's now in a nunnery. She's actually a Buddhist nun, and she's in a, what you might call a contemplative, place where she, you know, like they start the year on a 3-month silent retreat. And it goes on from there. And, I saw her one summer, a couple of summers ago, and, I said, you know, I'd like to know where we could go with Reiki. You know, like where we could go in service and where we could go, like is there a bottom to Reiki, so to speak? And she goes, well, you know, you could just live in a community like we're doing and just do Reiki and see where it takes you. And I just have this kind of like little filter in the back of my mind, and in talking with you today, it comes up again. And I just wonder, will that ever be, and will somebody out there who's listening be inspired to do that? And I think that would be a wonderful thing.
I do too, and I think start doing it small. Start little, and when we went to Mexico, we had this two little tiny rooms, and now we've got two great big rooms.
Wonderful.
And that, you know, you never know. It's like if we would have planned it, I kind of got so scared before it ever happened, I would never promote it.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, when you just start off little, and then I think doors open and the universe or God or whatever supports you. And that's that taking a risk, like putting yourself out there and allowing yourself to be supported, allowing Reiki to do what it does. I think sometimes we're the biggest saboteurs. We have these great dreams and then we sabotage them ourselves. We don't allow them to unfold. We don't allow God to help us. We don't allow Reiki to help us.
Right. Well, I totally
close the door
do
before
that.
It's like, you know, we open the door and then we walk through and then we slam it shut before we... allow it to see what happens.
Right.
And what have you got to lose? This is only life. I'd rather, you know, I don't want to end my life and say, I wish I would have done that. I wish, what would have happened if I would have, you know, followed this dream or that dream? You know, what have we got to lose? And we've got everything to gain because
there's
lots of surprises. I think when you just take the risk and say, here. Yeah.
Well, you're definitely an inspiration, Carol. And that's wonderful that you followed your dream from when you were 8 years old. I think that's wonderful, and how it's come to fruition in a wonderful space. And all the people that you touch is great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And lots of support and wonderful people along the way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, Carol, thank you so much for yet another wonderful interview. And I'm, again, very inspired, and I don't know, a lot of dreams awakening inside of me. And that seems like a good place.
I think that's a great place. That's how we are, to build these dreams that are rising in us.
Right. Right. Great. Well, thank you very much for your service.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yep. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.